Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of Venture Maidens. Before we dive in, I just want to say a huge thank you to all of you for your patience during our end-of-year podcast hosting hiatus. For those of you who aren't aware, 2023 was a wild year for everyone in the TTRPG industry. Everything changed back in January of 2023 when Wizards of the Coast threatened to pull the public D&D license that allowed third-party companies like Kobold Press, the place I work full-time, to exist. And while Wizards eventually backtracked some of their decision, game designers like me went into serious overdrive to finish development of new games that would allow our companies to survive, our fans to keep playing our content, and secure the future of keeping this fantasy game we love forever and eternally in the hands of the public. For me personally, that meant a multi-year plan to develop Kobold Press's new game, Tales of the Valiant, suddenly became a one-year plan, and I have spent every day, nights, and weekends over the past year building a game system, running online playtests and in-person convention playtests for thousands of people. It has been a wild and exciting endeavor, but also the hardest year of my entire life. I am so happy to report that development of Tales of the Valiant is finished, and it will be available to the public in spring of 2024. In fact, you will definitely be hearing more about it as we incorporate elements of it into this very podcast. This also means my life, including my work on Venture Maidens, can blessedly return to some degree of normalcy, and you can expect us to return to posting routinely, delivering more Patreon rewards and all kinds of goodness. Thank you for sticking with us. I can't wait to see Tales of the Valiant out in the world. And of course, if you want to learn more about this heckin' game I've been talking about, definitely check out talesofthevaliant.com. That said, let's get to the good stuff. Thank you as usual to the wonderful Emily Mayo for composing our theme song, and to Tabletop Audio for providing additional ambient music. Also, a huge thank you to our new sponsor, the Bermuda Rum Cake Company. You've heard us talk about these fantastic cake makers before, but now we've got an official collaboration going on that lets you buy special Venture Maidens branded rum cakes. If you head to BermudaRumCakes.com/VentureMaidens, you can order yourself some delicious heckin' cakes in a variety of flavors in a gorgeous Venture Maidens branded box. We get a direct share of every Venture Maidens cake sold, so we highly encourage you to treat yourself to some cake while supporting us at the same time. Again, that link is BermudaRumCakes.com/VentureMaidens. You can also hit that link directly by looking for it in this episode's podcast show notes. What else? Okay, here's the recap of what happened last time. Then we'll kick off the action. Last time on Venture Maidens, our maidens went their separate ways as Tony and Arrow continued their quest to pluck a rose from the Hanging Gardens. Aoife stayed behind with Lou, reaching out to the sleeping court in hopes of finding a way to save her friend from a magically induced slumber. As Tony, Rook, Arrow, and Kit drew near the floating Titan Fortress, they were attacked by a monstrous mechanical bird. Luckily, they were saved by the crew of a nearby airship, a band of gnomish scholars under the command of an artificer named Gidget Glitch. After learning more about Lou's condition, Aoife made the decision to accept Felix's offer, which would grant her the power to save her drow friend. She pledged herself as a vassal to the sleeping sovereign Fae Court. And that's what happened. So now, here's the show.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. The story is now split in twain. Our hero's efforts prove in vain. One explores the old, and the other two embrace powers that are totally new. Ask what androids dream as we head into Favor, episode 40, Ghost in the Machine.
Folks, welcome to this very special episode of Venture Maidens. For this episode and the next episode, we tried a little bit of an experiment. Since our party had to split into several groups, we recorded what is happening to the characters separately, and have spliced everything together to jump back and forth between the events happening in real time. This is the first time we're playing with this format, so we hope we enjoy what you've put together for you all. To kick things off, I'll go ahead and introduce everyone, and then we'll roll right into the story. This episode, I, Celeste Conowich, will be playing your Dungeon Master. Sage will be portraying two roles this episode, that of the gnomish artificer Gidget Glitch, and everyone's favorite satyr bard, Aoife Flannery. Nassim Etemad plays Tony Silvertail, your half-orc fighter slash druid, and Katie plays Luvira Sath, your drow rogue. And that's the whole crew. Now, our story begins with our first scene, picking up where we left off with Tony, Gidget, and all their companions as they enter into the Hanging Gardens of Tethys. Let's dig in! So, Sage, Nassim, how are you guys feeling? You ready for this Titan exploration dungeon crawl we're about to step into?
I'm ready. I mean, like, Tony's in there like, yeah, we're gonna pick a rose. It's gonna be easy peasy in and
no
out.
Worries.
But
get a flower.
You know, been doing this a long time. I'm ready for the long haul.
Oh, yeah. We just fought a mecha rock. We're about to infiltrate some ruins. I am all about it.
So, yeah, we're gonna go ahead, dive right in here. So, at the very last moments of that last episode, we had had a conversation where Gidget, basically, after her crew in this cool airship had taken down this big mechanical rock construct thing, had a conversation with Tony and Rook and Arrow, and basically said, hey, I'm here to go look inside as well. So, if you going in, I'll come with you. And you all basically been preparing to, like, mount up and then fly to the main entrance here. So a couple notes before we, like, super, super dive in. So this episode is happening directly after that one, which means that any resources you all have spent in that fight are still gone. So I think, you know, Tony, you spent an action surge, so keep that in mind. Gidget, you spent some spell slots. So that's something there. I did also want to note, Tony, one of the gnomes on this craft would absolutely offer you either your choice of a crossbow or a longbow. I think the ship was probably equipped with both of those things, and you are proficient with both as a fighter. Since you don't have one, I want to make sure you have one before we go into this situation.
Okay. Okay.
Because if you're flying around on arrow...
Let me look them up real quick.
You know. So crossbows are a little bit more damage, but the deal is with them that you have to spend an action to reload them, unless you have a special feat. So you wouldn't be able to attack twice with your multi-attack until you get that feat, but it is more damage. Whereas longbows are a respectable amount of damage, but not nearly as much as the crossbow. Longbows also do, as the trade-off, have a longer literal range on them than crossbows do.
They don't take an action to load, though, and I could use my multi-attack.
But their damage is not as high as the crossbow.
That's okay. I'm going to go with the longbow. Can you tell me just what the damage die is for that?
Yeah, I believe it's a
1d8.
Okay. Lovely. I've got that ready to go.
And the range is something like banana pants, like 400 feet or something ridiculous, because they're longbows.
Oh, shit. That is banana pants.
Yeah. Yes, and then also before we dive in, I also wanted to talk a little bit, Sage, because you were playing Gidget, who is an artificer, which is a base class that isn't actually part of, like, the core 5e rules. It's in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything and the Eberron's Guide, but folks here may not be super familiar with it. So I was wondering if you could just give us kind of a general pitch, like, what is the artificer, and then talk a little bit about some of the cool stuff we might expect from Gidget for class features and stuff this episode.
Most definitely. Artificers are definitely the touch of steampunk to our fantasy realm. They are all about experimentation and brewing elixirs or crafting magical items. And so they're all about, you know, that foraging, crafting, creation, you know, like the impulse to build something and to fix something and break it down and understand how it works. And so there are a couple different types of artificers, but she specifically is a battle master. So one of her main features is she has a steel defender. This one in particular takes the shape of a large, technically a medium-sized boar named Albert Schweinstein.
Right. This. Oh, I forgot. Albert didn't come out during the fight. Lord. Yeah, no, continue.
No, Albert was in the lower decks helping one of the other gnome crew members, you know, make sure that everything was just, you know, operating after being struck by this rock. So that is actually her shield defender, who has its own hit points, can help out in combat and everything. And her other main thing that she does is that she is able to infuse items with magical properties. So at this level, she gets to infuse basically 3 magic items per like day. And then you can choose, you know, every day when you wake up, you can choose new infusions that you swap out for every day. So her 3 things are, scrolling down on my character sheet. So she has the Boots of Winding. So as a bonus action, she can like teleport 15 feet. And she also has, yeah, that's pretty sweet.
there is a weird thing where you have to have been in that space before to teleport back there. Like, so that it's like a weird loop effect. So look a little bit at that more, because I was like, what the hell? That's so cool. And then I started reading it. I was like, this is weird. So just keep that in mind as we go along.
Oh yeah, so it's as a bonus action, you can teleport up to 15 feet to an unoccupied space. You can see it. You must have occupied that space at some point during the current turn. So yeah, so whoop, bring yourself back around to somewhere, which is kind of interesting. And then on her half plate armor that she wears, she has the infusion of armor of magical strength, so she could expend charges in order to get a bonus to strength checks or strength saving throws, and she can also spend charges to save her from being knocked prone, which is pretty cool. And since we are a small gnome, you might imagine that strength is not our strong suit. So we made a strong suit. And then her
God. Okay. Unforgivable.
And then we have she has a heavy crossbow that has an infusion that makes it a magic item, and it gives it repeating shots, so she gets to ignore the loading property on her crossbow, and it makes it so that it does an extra bit of damage, makes it magical, and that so if she doesn't load in any bolts, it just shoots a bolt of like arcane force energy, which is pretty
hell
sick.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we saw that during, I think, the last fight, and that was cool.
Yeah.
AF.
So yeah, that's a good, and then she's also got a small assortment of some spells as well.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, artificers are very neat, and it's very appropriate and helpful that we have an artificer here, because the Titans themselves were kind of like the OG artificers of creation. So, you know, that might be helpful in this dungeon crawl. So don't worry, Tony. You have so many friends here with you. You've got Gidget. You've got Gidget's pig, Albert. You've got Kit, the little baby fox. You've got Rook. You've also got Arrow, the alicorn. So you've got a party of 6, including
yeah,
you.
Yeah, for real.
So,
it is a party.
Yeah. So don't worry. You're going to need it.
Wait, can Albie speak?
Can Albert speak?
Twine Albert speak? Cannot speak, but Albert does understand common. And can take orders.
All right. Albert and Kit are going to be best friends.
Yeah, that's actually, yes, Kit would love to ride on Albert and be away from all of you. And that's kind of the same situation with, so technically nobody can understand Arrow except for Tony, but Arrow, as an alicorn, can understand common, celestial, sylvan, all these kind of freaking languages. So I'm just going to say for this, for ease of use, you can all understand each other because Tony can translate and such. So we don't have to worry about that language barrier between all of us. Kit also seems to be able to understand completely everything you all say, though he also cannot speak. So that is that. Cool. That's all the business. So yeah, let's get into this dungeon crawl. So a couple things that are important for dungeons, in case you all only know about the dragons part of this game, because 5e has really not emphasized dungeons a lot. So some good practices. Let's just go over these. Traps, motherfucker. They're everywhere. So there are 2 ways you can go about checking for traps as you crawl through a dungeon. One is setting like a leader
position person who will basically be at the front and kind of use their passive perception. In every room you go with, this will be the person who I am checking. If their passive perception is high enough, you don't have to roll individually, like, for searching for traps. I will tell you if there is a trap at that DC in that room here, and then we'll just do that. So that is a little bit faster and kind of guarantees, you know, gets rid of some of the chance, the probability of failing, but it also means that you are set to one number. So if I have a trap that is harder to detect than that passive number, you fucked, right? Because it's not going to bing off. So that's one way to do things. The other way is every time you enter a new room, if you want to make a perception check to search for traps, you can elect one person to do that. Disadvantage being, it does take a little bit longer, and literally in the game time, because it does take about 10 minutes to, like, scan a room for traps. And then also you have to remember to do it each time, right? I'm not going to sit there and help you and remind you. So those are kind of the two paths. Typically in dungeons, it's always a good idea to make sure you know what you're doing there, because every room you should absolutely have your bases covered. There are 100% traps in this experience we are about to have. Number two, resource management. Very critical in dungeons. There are a lot of rooms, a lot of enemies. Things could get so much worse than you think. So be aware of what you have, what you're spending, and look for opportunities to rest when you can. So those are both very good things. Three, just be careful, because there are minions in dungeons. There are alert levels in dungeons. So, like, the things you do can be heard by other creatures around, usually, and things will get worse if you make them worse. So just dungeon etiquette 101 for everyone in this crawl.
I feel like we should have a meeting with everyone, because we have so many little companions and large companions. We said all of that to them. We had a little sit down and we said all these things.
So the
powwow.
Good thing is that you have two animal minded companions who are already naturally born cautious things, right? So Kit and, like, Arrow are used to having to deal with this kind of stuff, because being in the wilderness is kind of like a dungeon crawl. Everything wants to kill you all the time, right? And then Rook, you have a ranger. Rangers, great. Like, if you don't have a rogue, get a ranger, right, for dungeon crawl experiences. So they're good. So actually, I'm more concerned about Tony and Gidget than anyone else, which seems appropriate. in this
true
situation.
I mean, immediately I'm like, oh, okay, well, Rook should be our lead and be checking all those things. So
yeah, Tony, what is your passive perception?
11.
Oh, Jesus.
Gidget's is 10.
Okay. Rook's is just in case. Rook's is 15. So that's also not amazing, but it's...
Albert's is 16, and he also cannot be surprised.
Okay, so do we want the pig to be our passive perception track checker?
I think so, because he's metal. He's easy to fix, you know?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. So, we are going to elect Albert to be our lead. So that means he also has to walk in front of everybody else. He's like the front position.
Okay, Kit, baby, sorry. You got to stay with me. You can't ride on Albert if you're going to be first.
Kit looks at you with those, like, judgmental, almost cat eyes for a while, and then, like, crawls into your hair and is fine with it.
Good boy.
So, question. How are you carrying Albert? Because Arrow can certainly hold everybody else, I think, on his back. Like, you know, you've got a small gnome, you've got Tony, you've got another medium person. But I think Albert is probably going to be a bit on the heavy side. What's the plan here?
We drape a net over Arrow like a helicopter carrying,
like, put him in a sling.
A rescued person. Yeah, in a little sling hanging below.
That definitely makes sense, and just have Arrow carry him on one separate trip to lighten the load.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arrow could probably hold everyone, like, the weight, because horses are, like, ridiculously strong. He can hold up to, like, 600 pounds or something, like, absurd. So you can get it, but yeah, that net is a good idea. So you just, the space, we're running out of space. It's very crammed with, you know, Tony, Rook holding on to Tony, Gidget holding on to Rook. So
slap another pig on the back.
Yeah, there you go. You've got the Lord of Alicorns here, so thank God. Yeah, so the gnomish crew can easily, you know, rig up something for you. So Albert, what's the attitude of Albert? Is he cool with this? Is he loving it? Is he terrified? What's the deal?
I think he probably hates not being on the ground. And then so he does that dog thing when they see that they're about to be put into a pool and he starts just kicking his legs just out of instinct.
So Albert is just like swinging that, and that moment when, you know, arrow takes off, and it's a little bit awkward because, right, the gnomes sort of have to hold, they don't like just swing off into oblivion. So it's rough, and you, Tony, as arrow does take off, you sense the strain of him. This is like pushing the very edge of his capabilities, but he's handling it as you take off. So you are, the deck of the ship where we left you guys was about a couple hundred feet away from this structure in front of you. And as a reminder, this structure basically looks like a gigantic, like so vastly large, it's frightening, metal cube that is just hanging in the sky here. So you haven't gotten any, like, seen any gardens, any trees, any anything that would indicate any of these legends that you've heard of this place so far. It's just like this steel dome or cube, like with these big fuck you faces on all sides. And the one side that you had been moving towards had like this slit that moves like from the top to the bottom here. And there had been just like darkness when you stare down into it. You have no idea what's beyond it. And this tiny, tiny little landing platform where you see an actual entrance at the very base of this cube. So Arrow is taking off here and heading now for that platform. Gidget, what have you instructed your crew to do? Because you do know there are certainly more of those guardian things lurking out there.
So definitely after defeating the rock, she would give the orders that go down, see whatever you can salvage out of that creature, stack it onto the ship. Other than that, stay outside of that 300 feet perimeter. You know, until we call you.
Okay.
Give
so
a signal.
Reaching, probably, if that thing just fell, it would probably take about a day to get from where you are just, like, all the way back down to Earth and collect the parts. Like, this is how fucking high up you are. Like, this is... Yes. You're basically in space. Like, you're at the very edge of atmosphere of the mortal realm.
Wow. Do we feel it, like, in our bodies? Like, that struggle to breathe?
The air here is shitty, and it's been hard to breathe and stuff. And I will say, this is a fantasy world, so you all don't exactly understand concept. It doesn't really have a planet feel, so there's, like, no gravity, no atmosphere. But the way realms work in this world is that they expand and they contract, right, based on stuff. And so you're basically getting to the edge of the map, right? The very edge of reality at this point. So it's not technically like you would go out here and into space. Like, space isn't a thing in this realm, but you are feeling it. It is stressful on your system. It's hard to breathe. Your ears have hurt. Your head hurts. Like, people are not meant to be up here.
And so in that case, she would say, yeah, just, you know, fly or... revolve around the thing, see, you know, log what other flying constructs you can see and try to observe their patterns, and then just keep on that trajectory until you see us give the signal to fly in and swoop us out.
Cool. And I assume you would probably have some kind of like a sending stone or some way to contact them, yeah.
Something like that, or she would just use something like dancing lights to be like, to catch their attention, to be like, this is, you know, because also to not have to, like, yeah, make sound or anything.
Yeah. But yeah. This cube is so freaking scary, gargantuan. It's basically like you're going into a Borg cube. is sort of the sitch. So dancing light certainly isn't going to work. But I will say you can have a sending stone or like a scroll of the sending like spell if you want. I think Gidja is more than prepared.
Yeah, that's perfect
for this. Okay. Cool. So yeah, you have that conversation, you give the instructions, right? And then so the ship heads off as you all head down to this platform. And when you do get there, the wind roaring in your ears, I think your eardrums have popped several times now over the course just being up here and the elevation changes. And as you fly towards this cube more and more, just the size of it is so overwhelming. It's hard to comprehend, you know, as you get closer and you look up, and it's nothing but just reflective metal all the way up to the end of your vision, you know, in the blue sky. It's very dizzying and strange as you approach. And after what seems like a lifetime, Arrow finally lands, and you hear the clicking of his heels that slip a little bit on this platform that is, again, just entirely steel. And it's not like you see rivets or bolts or anything. It just seems to be completely made of this one sheet of metal. Very strange, very odd. And you are staring down this labyrinthian hallway that looks like it's just going into darkness.
Oh boy. Dark vision sitch.
Well, I'll start by just dismounting Arrow, helping everyone off of him, and untying the net for Albert. And Arrow, are you going to be okay in this level of darkness?
I'm fine, but I don't think this is a typical darkness. I should be able to see beyond it. I think there's some kind of veil or spell blocking the way.
I guess we go forward and see if there's something on whatever other side there is.
Yes. Rook sighs.
Albert? Albert, lead the way.
Albert, over you.
I was going to say, yeah, Albert will click forward. You hear the little metallic clink of his hooves on the stone or on the metal on the floor.
All right. So Albert kind of sniffs, you know, the air, this like dark veil leading forward, and lets out like a little mechanical grumble, and then disappears into the wall. And you see with that darkness like consumes him as he moves in. And you do hear like a snorting from the other side, which would be a sign that, you know, Gidget means it's safe, whatever is on the other side.
Yeah, it's one snort for good, two snorts for I found something.
He's honk honk, or sorry, honk. God, if I start snorting now, we'll never make it through this recording. So one snort, all good.
One snort, good. And Gidget, she'll relay that to everyone else so they also know the system, and then she'll wave everyone forward.
That seems like a good place to break as we turn our attention to what's happening with Aoife and Lou. Doing, Sage and Katie, feeling confident? There's only two of you this time.
Oh, I am so excited to, after our little legacy game break, happy to jump back in with my little baby bard.
Oh, your baby bard who is so big and has such big things happening. And how are you feeling, Katie? Because this episode might be a little, you know, addressing some stuff too. So you ready?
Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of time to think about how devastated I am for my character. So I'm just going to slip back into that devastation pretty easily, I think.
Perfect. But anyway, yeah. Lots of big stuff happened, obviously. So we now have, of course, Lou trapped in this false dream created by Jada, who fully intends to keep her there for as long as it takes for her party to fail at their quest to get rid of this favor from Hecate. And then we have Aoife, who has just officially pledged herself to one of the sovereign courts, officially now going to be a vassal of the sleeping court. So yeah, that's where we're picking up after those huge major decisions were made. But of course, before we dive in, I did want to take a little bit of time to actually talk about sort of like the way we do with level ups, you know, like what actually being a vassal of the Sleeping Court means. because this is actually a mechanic that you can do in the Venture Maidens campaign guide. Essentially, in the book, we do have templates that you can apply to. They're specifically made for monsters, but in this instance, we're also adapting them to be on player characters. But yeah, so each of the courts has their own different templates, and there are three ranks within every court, and the templates are different for each. So we have Vassal at the lowest level, which is like the most populous of the courts. Most individuals in each court are vassals. And then, of course, you have the courtiers, which are like the dukes and the duchesses you all have run into a few times. And then the monarch is the sole like reigning fey at the top, which is, you know, the sovereign of the sovereign courts. So you are now a vassal officially. So what does that mean? Sage, tell us what is changing about Aoife?
Oh boy, everybody hold on to your pants because this is bananas. All right. First things first, I'm now considered a fey, officially.
Mm-hmm. Your creature type is now fey and humanoid, yeah.
So any spells or abilities that affect fey now affect me.
Which mean you can be banished or protected against evil, et cetera.
Indeed. I have immunity to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical attacks.
Just like most fey.
Our bard is a tank now.
Yep, exactly. 1,000%. We knew it would happen. It's inevitable for me. And I gain immunity to the charmed condition. I can speak Sylvan, though I already could. And then I get two more additional traits. I am immune to any effects that would put me to sleep or cause me to become unconscious. And I can move through other creatures and objects as though they were difficult terrain. But if I end my turn inside of an object, I'll take 1d10 force damage. So
you're part incorporeal now. Yeah. Good shit. Yeah. So very exciting, obviously. So your physical status, your mental status, everything about you has changed now that you have embraced this other power. You have become a different creature than you were before in a lot of ways. And obviously, that's all the mechanical stuff, but clearly there are going to be ramifications on the story side of that too for making this choice. And I'm very excited to get into those. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. So, where do we start? Do we start with Lou or do we start with Aoife? Because holy shit, there's so much going on. Any volunteers?
Me. I picked me.
Okay. All right. All right. Sweet. So we're starting things off with Aoife. So Aoife, when last we left you, you had been in this dream space that has become familiar to you by now. This almost like crystal cave place where you've met Felix a couple times now. And at the end of that last exchange, basically the last moments you remember kind of kneeling before this dragon-headed man as he had tapped you on the shoulder and said, "Rise, vassal of the sleeping court." And with those words, the whole world had gone sort of dizzy and spun out, and you had found yourself, you had awakened back in the chicken hut there, and you had felt very different than you did before, but you had learned some things that you just knew with certainty, a few things. One, you knew that dream. Whatever Lou is trapped in, this is not something that has to do with the sleeping court. This is not a natural dream. Lou is trapped in some kind of construct. Two, you know that you now somehow have everything you need to fix this problem. You're certain of it. You're not exactly sure what that is. But as you are like kind of waking up into consciousness, coming into your body, tell me a little bit about Aoife now. Like, how do you feel? How do you look? Is anything changed about you physically? Do you feel totally normal? What's going on with Aoife right now?
I think everything about her, like you said earlier, does become a bit shinier. Her hair is longer and fuller. Like, her nails are longer. She's a little bit taller and fuller. She looks much more grown up than previously. And I think she walks now with much more fullness in her body and much more presence. And there's something very dominating about her presence. And it's that moment of when you look at her of a little bit of like gushing because of just how beautiful she looks, but also a little bit terrifying with how sharp her features have gotten.
Yeah, it's like every time you see Meryl Streep, you're like, oh my god, you're beautiful and terrifying, and I love you. Or Michelle Pfeiffer, right? You're like, that kind of like, whoa. Yeah, and I think, you know, everything about you, like you mentioned, it's more vivid. It's so much more you in a way that it will now be impossible for people not to notice you wherever you go. That's just carrying some of the Fae with you. Do you feel any different inside?
I think for the moment, her mind is still so full and focused on trying to fix what's happening with Lou that she hasn't really come to grips with it, but she does feel that more just sort of like natural resonant power. Like the first time she cast magic in her life and she felt that sort of static run through her body, that tingling just kind of coursing through her.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, as you're waking up and you're feeling this and experiencing this, a new sensation suddenly comes into your mind, and it's never happened to you before. So I'm not sure exactly what you even think of it, but you feel someone like you is very close. Like you feel them approaching. It's a small creature, and you know they're part of the sleeping court, and they're getting near, and they need something from you. It's just like it's almost like when you see a phone like ringing, and you know you have a call without actually. It's very odd. So apparently, members of courts can sense each other.
Sense each other. Yeah. Just everything about her body shifts and focuses, almost like detecting a sonar. And she immediately just like steps out the door and turns to face it. And with finding that little glass bead earlier, she just kind of calls out, "Little Nuska, I bet you're around here somewhere."
Yeah, and you feel a recognition, a happiness, like sort of approaching like the front door of this hut. And then you get another of these feelings, like a feeling of bad recognition, almost like dread, as you see Gordon rolls out from like underneath the couch and looks up and kind of quivers like a vine at you. What have you done? What is it? It is not what it was before.
Oh, blessed Gordon. And she turns to Gordon and
he shies away. Like as you do it, you see him roll backwards and you're like, is that fear? That might be the first time you've ever seen Gordon retreat.
And she turns towards him and focuses that power. And when he shirks back from her, she just cannot help but smirk in delight. And she's like, that's right. And I'm still stitched into the embroidery of this house.
Something is wrong. You are wrong. You might be here now, but you cannot be here for long. This is wrong. You're not supposed to be here. We're not supposed to be here.
And he starts cackling, and he pulls up the vines like into his body, and you see like there's the plonk as, you know, the little jack-o'-lantern head closes and the lights go out and he becomes inanimate on the floor.
And she just kind of turns and leaves him. And oh man, yeah, she's going focusing again, trying and turn and find that sleeping court creature that's nearby.
Yeah, yeah. And you hear, you know, a familiar tapping on the front door. It's like what you heard before when those Nuska were trying to get in, the sound of their little, like, clawed feet. hitting at the door.
She'll step outside and extend an arm towards it to allow it to perch on her.
Yeah, so you open up the door and you see another of these, you know, the long serpentine body of the Nusca. And this one actually looks a little bit bigger and kind of hardier than the ones you've seen before, more like boa constrictor size as opposed to like garden snake kind of size. And there's like a chirp of delight that comes from this thing when you open the door, but it can't land on you because you see held in its like six legs is a flute. It's like a midnight blue polished wood flute that it is holding.
And she kind of picks it up with its little serpentine body hanging down, and she'll wriggle it from its grasp and examine it.
Yeah, and the creature, as it does so, you know, kind of turns itself into a pretzel shape, sort of hovering in the air, like waiting to see if it should go or come in. You get the sense, you somehow know what it's thinking. Like, it doesn't know if it's welcome or not.
And she'll open up the door and she'll flick her head towards inside, gesturing it to welcome it in, and she'll, you know, just be immediately entranced by this object, looking over every crevice, and she'll give a, you know, a few tests of, like, notes on it.
Yeah, so the Nusca does, it comes in and makes itself right at home, you know, curls up, like, on furniture, and then, like, is up and down and up and down, like, just drifting around the whole house, smelling everything, like a dog would. And this flute, the minute it gets into your hands, it feels warm, and you can tell that it is powerful. This is a magic item of significant power. And as you hold it, it also just, it feels right. Something about it feels so right. And yeah, you play a couple notes, and it's got a beautiful, just crystal clear sound. Have you ever been a flute player? Have you ever played a flute in your life?
She does. She does have a flute, like a very small, like child's flute that she had, like that was one of her first instruments that her dad gave her and tried to get her to play, even though she was never really interested in practicing music. So it's like, you know, it's like whipping out the old school recorder and trying to remember how to play Hot Cross Buns.
Yep. And this flute, too, it's actually like more of a proper flute with keys and like more of a complicated. It's got like this crescent shaped kind of like plate in it. So this is a lot fancier than any of those, like, you know, just carved recordings or recorders or anything you've seen so far. But that doesn't seem to be an obstacle for you, as your hands like innately find the notes, and somehow you play beautiful music from this flute without really having much experience with it. And you swear it's getting warmer and warmer in your hands when you hear, "Hello, Aoife?"
She looks around, left and right.
Nobody and said that. It's in your mind.
And she tries to reach out her sense again to see if she can detect any other court members nearby.
You do not.
And then she looks down at the flute, and she, like, holds it up very unceremoniously to her face, and she says, "Hello?
My name is Suwan. Are you Aoife?"
I am.
Good. I'm in the right place. I have been sent to help you."
She shakes a little bit. She's like, "Are you trapped inside?"
"Stop that. No, stop. Stop that. I'm not trapped inside. I am the flute. It's me. This is my body. Stop shaking me."
She like turns around and she's like looking through both head, like through the end and through the embouchure. And then when it says like, "Stop that, this is my body." And she like holds it up right again, like very reverently. She says, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I've never, I mean, my da always said that the instrument spoke to him, but I didn't think it was a literal experience."
"I doubt he's had the literal experience. Yes, that does seem more poetry than not, but I assure you, I am a sentient flute, and I am here to help you if you wish my help.
She nods. All right, yes, can you help me? And she, like, points the embouchure of the flute down at Lou, as if, like...
It's okay, I can see from all sides, you don't... But I appreciate the effort.
I apologize. This is such a new experience, but...
You also don't have to speak out loud, by the way. You can just talk to me the same way I'm talking to you. If you wish. I am bound to you, new vassal.
She looks around, so confused, and she's like, perhaps later. I think it will help if I talk things out loud, after all. We'll get there.
I see. You are a very strange sort of fae, aren't you?
I'm very new to this. Like, literally 5 minutes ago, you're my first fae friend. Well, not my first, but...
Oh, I am not a fae. I'm a flute.
She looks even more perplexed. She doesn't know how to make heads or tails of that.
It's all right. We can... discuss this later, I suppose. Yes, so your friend here, this is the help you need, I'm assuming?
Yes. I spoke to, well, I call him Felix, but a high-ranking member of the sleeping court, I presume. Not really sure. No straight answers. But he said that she's trapped in a false dream, not one sent by the sleeping court, and that I now have these powers... fresh with the powers, and that I can use them to help her, but I'm not really sure how, and then you came, and I'm hoping you got some insight.
Hmm. There's, like, a very... because the flute obviously doesn't have a face, but you hear the voice, but you can also sort of feel the emotions of this thing. It's all very weird as it's being translated, and you get a feeling of kind of somber consideration from this flute.
Well... I can help you access the dreams of any creature, but your friend does appear to be elven, which means she is not the source of this dream, as you have already learned. To infiltrate whatever dream holds her, we need to know who the dreamer is.
Ah, I see.
Once we know the creature who holds the dream that holds your friend, we can infiltrate that dream.
All right. I know that Hecate has sent dreams to us before. That's how she's gotten Tony trapped up in all of this. She gestures vaguely. It might be her, but I'm thinking it's going to be a little bit difficult to get to her.
True fae rarely dream. They... typically have to work through other creatures to do so.
Ah, and she sticks a finger up in the air as a light bulb comes up over her head. So we know that Jada has been made some kind of bound to Hecate's will somehow. So my guess is her. Lou just saw her recently, so she's got to be kinda nearby, but how to find her? Oh, and then Aoife is going to start rummaging around Lou's room. Katie, what would Lou have that belonged to Jada? What would be, like, the thing that she reveres that, like, this was Jada's that I hold on to?
She has a broken compass that she was gonna go get fixed for her.
And I imagine, is it, like, tucked in, like, a drawer or jewelry box? Or is it held in a position that looks, like, of power?
It would be tucked into her nightstand in her room.
So, Aoife starting to rifle around, sees, like, the bedside stand next to the table, and she thinks, ah, if I wanted someone close to me, something of someone who was close to me, I'd keep it next to where I'd sleep so that I could remember them. And she rifles through the drawer and finds this broken compass. And she looks to the flute and says, You think you got enough magic for me to be able to find where she is? She wants.
The flute laughs, and you get the feeling of covering their mouth. My dear, certainly. If you know the creature who holds the dream, it doesn't matter where they are. As long as they're on this plane, we can step into their dream.
She goes, ah, okay, all right. All right, I can do this.
All you have to do is play the song, and I will work my magic. So literally, mechanically, what is happening is that one of the abilities, because also, by the way, you are attuned to Siwan the flute. You didn't choose it, but the flute chose it, and your new sovereign sure did. So that takes up one of your attunement slots, just noting that now. But one of the properties of Siwan the Nightingale is that as an action, while you are in favor with the sleeping court, you can play a soothing lullaby from the flute for 1 minute. At the end of the time, you can choose to cast the arcane I dream or scrying spell from the flute, and you can do each of those spells once per day. So this will be the dream spell that you need to cast from it. So as long as you can choose Jada as your target, choose a creature known to you as the target of the spell, must be on the same plane of existence. Yep, you or a willing creature you touch, so it would be you, enters a trance state acting as a messenger. While in the trance, the messenger is aware of their surroundings but can't move or take actions. So basically, you can appear in the target's dream if they are asleep, and you can converse with the target, and you can actually even shape the environment of the dream. So you gain a great deal of control, basically, just by being able to infiltrate this dream here.
And so she will get into the bed next to Lou and kind of shove her over a little bit so she has enough room to sit, and will prop herself with her back up against the headboard, and she'll hold the flute up to her lips and begin playing. And with this broken compass sitting in her lap, she begins to play a song that evokes calm morning seas and the image of, seagulls flying into the bay as the sun rises, and, the pinks and oranges of sunrise sort of would wash this, seascape in just a variety of different colors. And halfway through her song, it becomes, as she begins to feel something within her pulse and change, as she becomes more in tune with this flute and with the song and with Jada's dream and state of mind, it becomes this dark, tempestuous song that's full of mourning and sorrow and pain. And this, as she's sitting in Lou's room, the fuzzy edges, or the edges of everything begin to grow fuzzy as she kind of feels her body just fall into this new place.
Yeah, and I think, as you finish those last notes of your dirge, your seafarer's dirge, you barely register that the flute kind of falls out of your limp hands and rolls onto the bed beside you as you go unconscious. And you find yourself somewhere very different, not quite where you expected. But we'll get to that in a second, because we're heading to see what's up with Gidget and Tony. Tony, Gidget. So you move forward, pushing past this odd curtain of darkness, and you enter a room that certainly is not what you expected on the other side. There is light in this room that you pass into, and it takes you, I think, a while to kind of get the read of your surroundings, just because the space is so freaking gigantic. Again, Titans were actual giants, in game terms, so they were incredibly large, and this space was clearly made for them. So you are in some kind of grand entrance hall area that looks almost medieval, actually. It looks like a castle, but on blast on the other side here, as you are staring up at these gargantuan paneled walls, like depicting all kinds of stories, colors, legends. And there are like these gigantic pillars that run from the floor to the ceiling. And you see like magnificent carpets around here. There are lounge chairs and like seats that, you know, are made for somebody five times your size scattered about this room. All of it looks actually quite nice, quite regal, something you might expect in like a luxury hotel or something, until your gaze moves to the front of this room here, where you see these gargantuan doors that were, you know, must have been elaborately decorated and beautiful in their day, are just smashed and buried under like tons and tons of rubble. It almost looks like somebody took one of the columns or something in this room and banged it against this door to seal up this entrance forward. So the scope, I think, of all of this comes in, and the lighting throughout is coming from these like glass orbs that are set in the walls. We would recognize them in our modern world as like lamps, just, you know, around this space here, but something like this is very odd to see lighting up this space here. And you will see, like, far across this gargantuan room, you can just make out, like, a couple, maybe it's, like, statues or something that are actually, like, your people-sized, flanking this, like, ruined mess at the front of the doors. What do you want to do?
I think I want to investigate the rubble and see if there's any, like, any hope of moving, shoving the things out of the way to create an opening of some kind.
Yeah. So you go and you step into the room, and it takes you probably 5 minutes or so to like walk across the hugeness of this room, as you're moving through and, you know, passing by the various columns and decor and all of this, until you get closer to this rubble. And you can see now those like little figures on either side that you were having trouble seeing across the way. It looks like a pedestal that you might see like a bust on in an art museum. And indeed, there are busts sitting on these things, like just the waist up of a humanoid-shaped creature, but it's made out of plates of metal and something like these wiry, maybe twig vines to you. You've never seen anything like it. And this figure is sort of just slumped there, like their head is down on their chest, and yeah, so they're very strange. They're clearly meant to sort of look like people, but they don't have like little skin or facial details. You've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, immediately distracted. She's now investigating these statues.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's weird because they're the only thing in here that is clearly meant for people of your size. Like the torso is about the same as you. And you're looking at it there, and there seem to be like dark panels, maybe like where eyes would be. You're not sure how it's like fused into the pedestal. So you're like, is this a creature? Is this one thing? Like, it's so weird. And actually, as you look at the other one across the way, one of them is fully intact and sort of has a feminine look to them. The other one across the way has been completely like smashed. You see the remains of it, but somebody has, like, I don't know, maybe a chunk of stone or something fell, and like half its face is gone and an arm is missing, and you can see those black twig things all around the inside, and some like black fluid that has leaked out.
Does it like resemble any of the mechanical things like Albert or the rock that we've seen so far?
Actually, yeah. When you saw like the bird, once it like opened up, you know, kind of those panels, when you started blasting away at it, you saw a lot of this kind of black, those little cords and like twists. You know, we would recognize them again modern day as like wires. But that's clearly, these things were probably made by the same person, if you had to guess.
Oh, hey, Gidget, I think you might be interested in whatever this statue thing is.
Oh, delightful! I've been wanting to study their tech up close. And she'll go over and, you know, sitting on the back of Albert, because he is medium and she is small, she'll head on over there and she'll, you know, stand up on his back and she'll immediately pull out like a gem cutter's like IP so that she could like get a real in-depth close look at it and start kind of poking and prodding.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Definitely make me some kind of check. I would say investigation would probably be my big pick, but you could definitely also do arcana, I think, or something else that makes sense to you.
Definitely. We have both investigation and arcana, but we'll go with... Actually, since she has the inclination that this is probably somehow magically like created or animated, she's going to go with arcana.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Ooh, nice. That's 16 plus 8 for 24.
Mm-hmm. This is definitely Titan tech. Something you have been starting to call those kind of guardians or things around, the term you have coined is automaton so far. So we can say you would recognize this as another kind of Titan automaton. You have seen remains of things like this in other Titan settlements and ruins, but nothing as intact as this thing in front of you, which is very exciting. The fact that it is, yeah, humanoid, and yeah, as you're looking at it, so it's your best guess, probably some kind of interface device. Since it is sitting in a reception hall, so there might be some information or something you can glean from it. But clearly, whatever was powering it is no longer active. This thing seems to be deactivated. So maybe if you could get it on, if you could power it in some way, you might be able to learn more.
Neat. So she is going to go over towards the other one that's smashed in the corner and see if she can find any useful parts out of it. So like maybe another battery core, something that she can like put like some arcane energy into to juice it back to life.
Cool. I like it. So there's like this thing is like basically a corpse right now. So I would like you to give me some kind of... You have like tinker's tools or something as you're digging around in this thing, trying to like find a part.
Definitely. Yes, as a rock gnome, she is a specialized tinkerer, so she gets double proficiency when she uses them.
Well, fuck yes. Okay, and that'll be, I think, dexterity as you're digging, or intelligence, your pick, as you're digging through.
Definitely. intelligence would be nice.
All right, let's take intelligence then. And so for tools, remember, just because they're very confusing to everyone in 5e. So basically, you use a tool in place of a skill, right? So you always pair it to an ability score. And then if you have proficiency in a tool, you get to use, obviously, your proficiency for that. If it would double, it's the same way you would double it, like expertise in a skill.
So she got a total of 22.
Shit, that's so good. Yeah, so you are looking through the remains of this thing, and you're like, whoa. I think, you know, we might lose Gidget right here if it wasn't a full mission, because this is so fascinating as you're looking at the way this thing is put together. It's almost like veins in the body, right, that are moving through this thing and, like, allowing it to move. So it must be able to animate, and you're seeing all the full range of motion. It's so exciting. And finally, you're digging around there, and you get to, like, the heart place of where this thing would be, and you find like a crystal that has been like shaped almost like in a cylindrical fashion, and you see it secured by wires on either side that must allow whatever energy in there to like move through all the wire. Fascinating.
Arcane battery.
Yeah, so she, as delicately as she can, you see her very gently, you know, taking out some tweezers and plucking these wires off as she carefully extracts it. And then she'll bring it over to the one that's more together, and she'll go to, like, what do you think? Could she, like, expend, like, a first level slot to give it some juice and put it into the other one?
I would let you do it with your, because you have, like, don't artificers have a minor magic... Like, you can make shit glow or make it do messages or something.
I mean, she has her tinker from being a rock gnome where she can make little, like, clockwork devices, but...
Okay. No, I was pretty sure it was, like, the, So, magical tinkering is the feature. So, you can imbue a tiny non-magical object with a magical property of your choice. 5 feet radius, 6 second long recorded message, emits odors, static, visual effects.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll let you expend one of your 5 uses of that to power this bad boy.
Nice.
Damn, 5 is a lot. That's nice.
Yeah. So I figure that's, you know, because your spell slots are going to be very precious. So let's put this to work. True.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you, like, imbue your little, I don't know, how do you do this? What does your little magical tinkering look like?
So she basically, as she, like, she has extracted this, and she goes and she places it into the other body, and she takes out basically, like, this, like, cone-shaped item, and then you see, like, this bit of, like, electricity kind of crackles from her fingers, and then focuses and draws down the point of this sort of, like, almost, like, quill-like thing to, like, channel it through the point of it into the device.
Cool. Yeah, so as this happens, I think everyone, you know, Arrow, Kit, Rook, who have been looking on at this, just like, what the hell is happening? Maybe jumps back a little when this thing all of a sudden, like, shifts and animates. And just like a person might, you know, except without legs, this device comes to life. And where you would see, like, normal, you know, humanoid eyes, you see these, like, flashing green lights that activate. And it scans around and clearly looks at each and every one of you and says something in a beautiful, flowing, gorgeous language that none of you understand.
Tony draws the longbow.
Yeah. And the thing looks at you and sort of cocks a head inquisitively.
Oh, drat. I unfortunately don't have comprehend languages, so I'm not able to communicate with this creature.
And when you say that, the creature, like, stops looking at Tony and, like, focuses on you and says something again in that language. And it sounds like a question mark. So they go blah, 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 at the end.
And Gidget will say, affirmative.
And the thing nods and you hear like a TV static sound that comes out of this thing for a moment, and then it sort of shakes its head, and it says, common language detected. Would you like me to speak to you in the common language?
Yes!
Excellent. And then it, like, pauses, and then gives you a clearly pre-recorded message, as it says, welcome to the Hanging Gardens. I am here to enhance your experience. How can I assist you today?
I'm looking for a rose.
We have many fine roses at the Hanging Gardens.
The pathway to your roses is blocked.
The figure pauses and sort of turns around and looks. Yes, that appears to be true. The main entrance is currently malfunctioning at this time.
Other entrances to the gardens?
There's a pause. You would like me to tell you about other entrances into the gardens?
Yes.
I see. Well, are you getting mad at my Alexa robot? Don't worry about it.
Tony's never dealt with robots. She has no patience.
Yeah. You would like another entrance into the gardens? Well, you cannot enter through the main passageway, but perhaps you could enter through the utility tunnels. Would that be satisfactory?
I mean, yeah.
Excellent. To find the utility tunnels, direct your attention towards the back panels on the far left and far right sides of this hallway. You will need a maintenance key to enter.
Where do we find a maintenance key?
I'm sorry. If you are not maintenance staff, you cannot have a maintenance key.
I am maintenance staff. I've simply dropped my key under the rubble of this malfunctioning door. Would you mind reprinting me a maintenance key?
I am sorry to hear that you are having difficulty. Have you lost your maintenance key?
Yes, I have.
I am sorry to hear that. Let's see what I can do about that. And there's like another of those TV like sounds on the inside. I'm sorry. I cannot provide you with a maintenance key at this time. Why don't you use the maintenance override?
Yeah, why don't I?
Gee, wait. Scenting rhetorical question.
Yes, we would like that.
Good. Proceed to the maintenance doors and activate the maintenance override. Is there anything else I can assist you with today?
What is the maintenance override protocol?
I do not have that information.
She just looks at Tony and shrugs, starts heading over there.
Can you tell us the way to the roses or the rose garden from the maintenance tunnels?
I am not programmed with a full map of the maintenance tunnels. My job is for the main entrance, which is, unfortunately, blocked.
Where can we locate a map?
Well, in the atrium just beyond the main, and they turn around. I do not have that information at this time.
All right, can you turn her off or, you know, turn down the volume?
I think it'll stop talking once we move away from it, or at least I suppose.
Yes, I am programmed to interact with visitors in the reception hall. If there is nothing else I can do to improve your experience, I will shut down to preserve battery power.
Thank you.
Have a beautiful day. And just like shuts off. Yeah, so looking at either side, you can go to these corners she mentioned. At a glance, just looks like normal like wood panels as part of this. Like, the whole room is covered floor to ceiling wood panels, like that are highly decorative, you know, portraying all these different scenes. So it just seems like there's another blank panel kind of in this space here.
I say we go to the left one.
You will see the same thing on the left side.
And you said this reception hallway was well lit, right?
Yep. Yep. The lamps and everything here.
Yeah, she'll definitely be like, Rook, was it? Can you see if there's any secret doors or something that moves?
Yeah. Okay. So Rook got a very good roll, 16 on the dice, plus her investigation. And as a reminder, anyone can look for secret doors. It is just an investigation check. There is no penalty to look for secret doors for any other class in this version of the game.
Oh, damn. Well, I would have done investigation. Oh, well.
Yeah, only rogues could do it in older editions or people who had that skill, but it is anyone can look for secret doors now. It's just an investigation. Yeah, so Rook will, you know, feel around on the wall. She's like, yeah, that's definitely a panel. Anyone mind? As she, like, pulls out a dagger and, like, is gonna just pry it the fuck in there.
Gidget will pull out a crowbar and be like, oh, please, spare your weapons of misuse.
Okay. And she'll kind of walk back towards you, Tony, be like, I actually think I like her.
Oh, man, I'm glad she's here.
Yeah, this is all very freaky. Yeah, so give me a strength. Give me a, what are you doing? Just brute forcing this boy. So
a strong lady, use that strength with this crowbar to pry it open.
All right, I'll take that crowbar. Give me that crowbar.
All right, give me that athletics check as you pry this bad boy open. Manual override indeed.
Manually overriding, that's a...
Sometimes it's really just that simple.
14?
A 14, yeah, that's enough. It's shitty. It's not, you know, a perfect thing. You're like, oh god, like as these steel plates come up, you have to bang on it a few times, right? Gotta shove the door open. But eventually the panel does swing, and you can see there's just like a shitty door kind of hidden behind this. Of note, too, this door is humanoid sized. So it's you sized. So it's not gargantuan like the rest of this place. So whoever maintenance was, they're probably closer to your size than Titan size.
Oh, so this is the maintenance door. It's not like another panel somewhere else.
Mm-mm. No, this is so hidden behind this panel was the maintenance door. So presumably you had a key, a nice arcane key. It might have swung open and been super nice for you, but you just, you know, brute shoved the panel off the door, manual override style,
mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Albert through first.
That's right.
All right, so you open up that door, beam, and as you get inside, now you are in a very dark space. You see that there are stairs, like just metal stairs leading down, kind of winding in a very tight corner, like stairwell into the darkness. There are no lights on in here.
Yeah, he'll clop down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Arrow is cramped, actually, in this space as you're moving through these, like, thin tunnels. So it's very strange being in, like, a very large space and then suddenly going to not large. And horses and boars trying to get down the stairs. It's very uncomfortable and awful as they're doing this and the metal. And it's very dizzying and reverberating. Like, this is not comfortable for any kind of living creature. So poor maintenance. Staff, as you're leading down further into the dark. And then you do get to the point where you cannot see, if those of you who don't have dark vision. So what's the deal, kids? What's the plan?
What did you say Gidget had? Fairy fire, or?
She has dancing lights, so she can summon, like, five little magical lights that will blink and illuminate the way for us.
Because I got nothing.
Or we could light a torch, but yeah, so she can spam that every minute.
All right, so yeah, you have your little bobbing lights. Any flavor on these lights? You can make them any color and shape you want.
Oh, they're hot pink.
Hot pink, baby. So we have, like, kind of a neon, like, industrial club vibe that's starting here. I like it. I love that as we're moving down into the dark. But speaking of darkness, let's see what's happening with Lou, who is still lost in dreams. So, Lou, when last we left you, you had been pulled into this dream, and this landscape around you, you were in some sort of cavern, like completely sealed. There's no daylight, there's no moonlight, nothing that would indicate, you know, the outside. And this cavern is filled, like, with, you know, water. You're, like, currently standing on one of these, like, rocky shores in this wet cavern that is cold and slimy, and just you hear the constant drip, drip, drip of water from somewhere. You can see, like, the ruined halves, you know, bowels of smashed ships that are, like, half sticking out of the water. This kind of ship graveyard is where Jada seems to have pulled you into her dream. And after just hearing this, seeing her standing across from you, it's just the two of you in this place. She had looked at you, and you could see, you know, the barnacle-crusted, like, undead pallor to her skin. Like, her eyes are milky, like a corpse that's been left underwater for too long. And despite her urgings, you had gotten that full look at her now, fully and truly, and she had told you she was not going to let you leave, whatever it took. She was not going to be part of allowing you to get rid of Hecate's favor. The only thing that is keeping Hecate from killing all of you. So that kind of had dropped. And now here you are standing across from this person you used to know so well, staring at you with these literally dead eyes.
I think there's silence after she says that, in that dripping of water just continues and reverberates through the cavern, and it starts to, like, make her clench her jaw and drive her a little crazy, just hearing that and staring at the person that she knew better than herself. Just looks aside. She doesn't really even care much about that. She knew that she would change over the years, but she's alien to her now. And she covers her face with her hands and just takes a second to not look at her. And she finally says, "Jada, you are making me fucking furious right now. But for what it's worth, in any state, I thought I'd never hear your voice again." And she takes a few steps towards her and grabs her shoulders. And she's like, "I didn't think I'd touch you again. And pulls her in for a hug.
Jada, like, definitely resists, sort of. It kind of puts a hand and gently pushes you away. And she says, "Don't mistake this puppet for anything like the person you used to love."
I know that you're not the woman you used to be, but if you're here, then that means that it's a change from nothing, nothing at all for 10 years. So this is the most horrible thing, but it does give me a little bit of hope that maybe it's the next step to helping you.
She closes her eyes and, like, you see she takes a deep breath, and as she does, you hear a sort of a rattle, almost like somebody, you know, with flute in their lungs would make. And there's, like, a painful kind of cough. "I'm beyond helping. I'm here to help you. Because only one of us here is still alive."
"I appreciate what you're trying to do, but I need to be really clear, and I need for you to listen and understand what I'm going to say. Just because you're protecting me and trying to conserve my life doesn't mean that you get any say in how I spend it."
"Seems that's probably not true, considering you're stuck here, and I'm not going to let you go. So, like it or not, you're going to stay here until this is over, because I'm not going to lose you twice."
"You're definitely not my Jada, because you're fucking underestimating me and what I'm capable of. And I will get out here. And I'm not going to let my friends die because of your selfishness."
"I figured you might feel that way. But the only way out of here is to get through me. This is my personal hell, Lou. So I don't know. If you want to sit here and talk, we can do that. If you want to sit here and wait, if you want to try and kill me, we can do that too. Whatever you feel you need to do. But I'm not backing down on this."
"Well, I figure this shit out. I guess you can at least answer some questions for me." And she gestures towards one of the boulders.
"All right. I'll warn you. Like I said, this body, what I am, is little more than a puppet. And I'm not the one holding the strings. So there are some things I suspect I won't be able to tell you, even if I want to.
Like I said, it's a start."
She'll walk over. You know, she doesn't sit down. She doesn't get comfortable. You don't know if she's capable of being comfortable. But she kind of warily, you know, never turning her back to you, will, like, walk you over to, like, a rocky shoreline where you can sit. And she kind of stares out over the water. The dead ships, the silent and still water with that drip, drip, drip.
While she looks out at the water, Lou kind of turns in the opposite direction really quick. And she takes a moment to, almost like she's back in the chicken hut, try to see if she can have any kind of control at all over where she is by willing it in any way.
Yeah, and as much as you try, unlike in your dreams where, you know, you can have some psychic control, it just, the world feels the same. It feels inflexible, like you're in a real place. This is not your dream. You have no power here.
She turns back, the little mumble of fuck under her breath. And she's like, well, did you get my letter? Is that why you're here now?
I was brought back specifically because of you. Hakate hasn't been shy on that. Since I returned, I've been keeping an eye on you and doing everything I can to do what I can.
So, what things were you and what was her? What was with the knife in the door? Are you just here to watch me and you have a little side hustle of stabbing the people who try to hurt me? Or what's the play?
I was trying to warn you. Hakate has more. And you see she like struggle, like she's gonna say something, and then it like is stopped in her mouth, and she's like, you all are very important to her, which is why I'm here. And as long as you are useful to her, it's in her interest for you not to be hurt either.
Well, shouldn't you be helping my friends then to keep them safe, even if you keep them away from the thing they're trying to get? They might die out there.
You are precious to me. They are not. I don't have a lot of control to defy what I'm told. I have a very short leash, but if there's one thing I've learned about the Fae, it's always the letter of the word. And if you can work around that, there's some freedom. Not much.
How did she even bring you back? She's from the Heavenly Court. That's not even a thing that they do.
I don't know. I was dead. I don't know where I think it had to be better than whatever this is. And I woke up and this was everything. And I think it's always going to be like this. I can't die. No matter how hard I try, I can't die now. Whatever I am, it's not human. It's not right.
So is that what you want?
To be this?
No.
No.
Do you want to move on?
From this? I can't. It's not even worth entertaining. I think she's made that very clear.
What? What do you mean you can't? There are ways to make undead back what they were. I don't know about them, but I'll learn if I need to. I'll do that for you. I don't want you to be here. Not that I don't want you. I just... This is like everything you loved turned terrible. You're by the water, but it's stagnant. Putrid. You're with me, but you're not. I can help you. You know that I can... I'll figure it out. There are wizards. They learn magic all the time. It's just a bunch of stuff and frilly hand motions. I made you hibachi one night. I can do that. It's not... Who cares?
And she turns around to you and she looks at you with such a serious expression as she says, "You don't know what you all are dealing with, what you all have stumbled into. Until I have seen such terrible things. She has made me see such terrible things about all of..." And like the words like choke again in her mouth. "This is not something a wizard can fix or..." "She brought me back. She owns my everything. I don't know how anyone could fight this. I certainly can't. And I don't want you to have to. Now, you aren't ready. None of you are ready."
"How am I ever gonna be ready if I can't leave this fucking swaddle you've put me in? You know me. You know that I'm never gonna give up on you. Did I think that not giving up on you meant trying to find a way to make you dead again? No, but I will do that for you, even if it fucking destroys everything that I am. I don't want to live like this either. I need to help you. Let me move on with some kind of closure."
And you can see she's starting to get upset. And like, as she is, you can see the surface of the water around this place starts to like shake and almost like bubble. You can see like steam starting to rise up from it, as clearly the emotions like she's experiencing are affecting this terrain around her. And she says, "You're not talking me out of this. You're only going to be here as long as it takes for your friends to fail, and then you will be free."
"If you keep me in here till they die, the first thing I'm going to do is go and find a way to make this right. I'm never going to stop being intertwined with Hecate. Ever. I will always be going after her, trying to fix this."
"Then I suppose we don't have much more to talk about."
"So that's it. We're just going to sit in this fucking hell forever."
And she's like looking around and you can tell she's kind of panicking. Probably doesn't. Just stop. Just stop.
"No. I will not stop. And fuck you for telling me to."
And she's like grabbing at her head and she's like, "I don't want to hurt you, Lou. I don't want to hurt you. Just stop. Just let it be."
"I am not going to stop. And you can't hurt me."
"But I will. I will hurt you and I don't want to."
"You won't. You would never.
You don't know me anymore." And as the silence stretches between you two, we close the scene and return to the Hanging Gardens. Tony, Gidget, Rook, Arrow, and Kit. So you all head down these winding stairs. Now the pink glow of these lights, the only thing to light the way for most of you who can't see in the dark. And as you are stepping down this again, purely metal building, you can't help but notice how loud all of your footsteps are and your armor as it's like clanging and reverberating in this. You're basically in a metal canister, right? And you finally get to like the bottom of whatever this room is. And you can see that this room is actually dimly illuminated. So dimly in game terms still means you can't see that well. You have disadvantage on perception checks while you're in here. Like, your range is limited on what you can see. But what's odd is, like, all of these, like, little blinking lights throughout this space. And they may be coming from walls or from, like, structures that you can just see kind of illuminated. And they're all in these different colors, like little buttons and dots, like that are just like slowly blinking and giving the whole place this eerie glow. And you also start to hear things, because in this room there are tons of piping, like industrial pipes going all throughout this room. Some of them are like as wide as, you know, you, Gidget, if you stood with your arms full out, like that's the size of the biggest ones here. But a lot of these smaller pipes and more of that wiring stuff that you're seeing just lined throughout this whole room here. And you can hear the sound of water that's actually flowing through these pipes. So every once in a while you get the, you know, the clunk, 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 clunk sound of somewhere far away. This water is clearly moving through and bottoming out in whatever rooms lie beyond this one here. So it's freaky. It's very, like, steampunky. Every once in a while you hear, like, the, like, steam coming out of some of these pipes that must be, like, pumping hot water. And then, yeah, the clangs from far beyond. Waterworks, utility tunnels, indeed. It's just this vacuous room that you're in here now, so what's the play? I will say Pig does not give you any, like, indication that there are traps that he can see in this room.
You said there were, like, buttons or blinking lights in the walls?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do you want to go investigate what those are?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they would look like, to our modern eyes, like circuit panels, basically. So there are, like, several points where you see that there are, yeah, little blinking lights. And they all have different symbols on them. And you, Gidget, would recognize some of these are symbols that you've seen before in Titan stuff. It's not like it's a language so much as it's, like, geometric symbols, more similar to, like, hieroglyphs. So you've seen some of these before. You've started doing some initial, like, studies piecing it together, but these are clearly some kind of commands. Things like, you know, on or, like, off, fast, like, not. And so these panels are at pretty regular intervals here in the walls, and some of them are by, like, you can see square grates, like, where, like, vents, like, air might flow through. So they might, some of them might control those. You're not entirely sure.
Interesting. Okay.
You would see some dials, like some gauges that are clearly tracking something that are moving.
Are any of them labeled with any kind of, like, script we can recognize?
No, it's just those, like, geometric symbols. So, like, those hieroglyph icons. They don't seem to have, like, actual true text on them.
And was there another door or anything leading out of here? Or is it just, like, the grates that we see that are would be, like, exits, like, out?
There could very well be doors, like, at the far ends here. You think you're sort of in, like, a long warehouse-style room on either side. So, basically, you could keep walking, like, away from the stairs, like down this hallway here into the dark and see if there's a door down there. Or you could walk like the maintenance stairs dropped you off here. You could keep walking in that direction and see. So you're basically at like kind of a T junction in this big room here that clearly keeps going on both sides.
Okay, got it.
And since it's so dark, you actually can't see the walls other than this wall that you're up against here. Right, and then there's all this piping and shit in the middle of this room here. So, like, on a starship, you'd be, yeah, in, like, you know, the, like, the maintenance tunnel kind of areas, except very large.
Yeah, so we've got the stairs that are behind us, and then we can go left and we can go right. I think to try and ease our traveling here, Gidget wants to spend, like, 10 minutes to see if she can figure out how to turn on, like, at least the lights in this hallway by messing with these circuits.
Yeah, for sure. How would you like to do that?
So I think with her artificer's lore, so she gets double proficiency related to magic items, alchemical objects, or technological devices. So I think she would first try and use, like, investigation to see if she can figure out the pattern. Like, you know, like, for, like, you know, logic gates, it goes, like, on, off. Or, and then it, like, fuels that to some, you know, to some output or whatever. So she wants to see if she can try, you know, with some trial and error to, you know, figure out, like, the logic of it.
Cool. All right. So you go ahead and make that roll and let me know in just a moment what that is. Nassim, well, you know, Tony is, I think, taking all of this in as well. How are you feeling in this? This is a very odd space to be in.
I think she's a little dazzled. The blinking lights and all this tech that she's never seen before in her life. Like, it's comforting that Gidget is there so she doesn't feel so, like, apprehensive about it. Or she's not so scared of it, but she is, you know, keeping her distance. But she's still like, wow, like, I wish I could understand this. It's like, what if we had use of whatever this stuff is? If place runs off of whatever this is, we got to learn how to harness this power. No wonder she's here. No wonder she's so interested in this. Like, she's understanding Gidget's mind a little bit more, but she has no idea what she's looking at. So I think distractedly, Tony is just kind of unconsciously walking towards the left down this wall of buttons, just kind of like looking at all of them and seeing what could they possibly mean.
Yeah. And so while you're, you know, meandering, I think if you go left, Rook will like swing to the right, and she absolutely has her crossbow like up, ready, you know, like watching down this other hallway. And Arrow is just, again, trying, sort of in the middle, trying to make himself small. Because even though this room, the ceilings are, you know, higher and it's wide, he clearly, this metal box is not working well. It's putting both him and Rook very much on edge. They're not metal box people. So as you're looking around and drifting, why don't you go ahead and give me a perception check as you're kind of like wandering down this left hallway?
15.
Okay. So 15. Yeah. So you're looking at these lights and it's just all so interesting and weird, and your head kind of, you know, swings down the way, and you see, because you can't really see, right? It's just that dim illumination. So just sort of on the edge of your vision in the darkness, somewhere down the hallway, you do see like a singular red light that is very low to the ground, like almost like something on the ground. And as you like look at it, you see it scuttles away. Like it was something small, and you hear the tap, tap, tap of like metal legs. And the red light goes out, and whatever it was, like, launches itself off out of your range of vision.
As quietly as I possibly can, I'm gonna scuttle back towards the group, towards everyone, draw my longbow as well, have it ready to go, and once I reach someone, whoever's closest, I imagine Gidget, I'm gonna say, something is watching us down the hall, down towards the left, a small mechanical creature with a red light on it just scurried away from me.
And Gidget, you're like, yeah. What? Give me that check.
Yeah. So she clasps her hand over her mouth as she like tries. She suppresses this like gasp of excitement to be like, oh, one of them's moving. And then she'll
Duly noted. I might have been able to figure out how to give us a little bit more illumination, as she did an investigation check of 30.
Holy 19 shit.
Plus 11.
This is where you shine!
I live here!
This is why we did Artificer! As you, yes, you're like, with that, pat! Like, dramatic button press, and there's a, ooh, like, a humming sound, and like, womp, 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 as red, like, maintenance lights go on. Like, that real red in sci-fi, right? When you lose backup systems on. Maintenance safety lights go on at the top of the room. So it's still, like, dimish, but technically for bright light, you're fine. You can see the full room now, but it's creepy low lighting as you're looking around. So you get the full, like, scope now of this room you're in. And as you felt, it's like a long rectangular room, probably about 40 feet wide on all sides, a 40-foot cube. A lot, this piping is just ridiculous now, as you can see the whole thing. There have got to be hundreds of these different pipes traveling further down to the left, down to the right, like into the other wall. Clearly, they're all leading into something. You can see like turning stops and steam valves and vents all over the place, all kinds of complicated mechanisms. And as you are looking down to the left, you can see that this passageway ends in like a steel door that has another one of these panels here. There isn't any other kind of clear like keyhole or way through. And then as you look down to the right, there is another one of these like sealed doors on either side. So you have two doors, one to the left, one to the right. There is no sign of whatever that little thing Tony saw.
Rook, did you see anything down the right side of this hall?
No, certainly no little red eye monsters. What? Where did it go?
I don't know. It scurried off kind of quickly. It turned off its light.
What do you mean scurried? What?
It was low to the ground. It was small. It didn't like sound heavy. It sounded light on its feet, and it darted away. I don't think we go that way. I think we go to the right. go to the right.
But where did it go? That's my problem.
It's a problem you're going to have to sit with, honey. We got to go.
Okay. she tightens the white knuckle grip on the bow. All right, little dude. Looking at you, Gidget.
The Gidget, like, really just laughs at that.
Kind of out of my element here, so you're leading the way.
All right, off to the right, as she said. And we'll go, Albert! You hear snoot to the ground, snuffling.
Moving along. Albert does not indicate that he can detect any traps.
We get to this door. She looks for any obvious way to open it. Key panel.
Hell no. So this is, you can use thieves' tools to try and override this door, if you would like.
I do still have the crowbar.
Yes, that the crowbar is always an option. So I will say doors in this place. In dungeons, there are typically two ways to open doors. One, with thieves' tools. If you do that, it is quiet and nice. And then if you do, there's usually another option that is not quiet or easy. But you will be able to open the door.
I don't have thieves' tools, so if anyone does, please step forward.
Oh yeah, Gidget definitely does. So she will, stride forward, and she pulls out her own little, like, scurrying thing, and will, like, it looks like a scarab that she sets onto the door, and it begins using its little legs as, like, little lockpicks, basically, to try and to override things.
That's mm-mm. cool.
This is Rook's face.
Mm-mm. That's cool.
No. No. An arrow will whisper in your mind, these friends you have are very strange.
Tony's looking at him like, yeah, but I'm really glad they're here.
Yes, I have never seen this kind of sorcery. It is not what I would have expected from the Hanging Gardens of Tethys.
Me either. I'm still kind of not expecting to even see a garden.
Yes, it seems finding a rose in this place will be much harder than we anticipated.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That is an 18 with her thieves' tools.
All right, how do you hotwire this door?
Yeah, so all of a sudden, after the scarab has been using its like front two legs to like press through all these different like locking patterns, you see as it figures out the last combination, it glows a bright green light, and you see a little bing, and then, like, does the door slide in, or does it push
it
in?
It opens on, like clam, you know, bite, so it opens up on either side, so the panels nice. Slide. I will say, also, you note that above the door, there was, like, another of these large lights, and as you look at it, it blinks green, and, like, hovers green. Why don't you go ahead and, because you did well, I'm going to give you another check to kind of interpret what this means. So why don't we go ahead and do
history?
Yeah, history. And this relates to technology.
Oh my god, we're rolling like a god today. That's 19 plus 11 for another 30.
It's only the first room. Get it all out now.
I know, right?
30, you're like, oh, clearly. So you're like, this light reminds me of modern alarm spells and how they have been deviated to this mark. So here, this green light probably indicates that we successfully bypassed some kind of security system that is in place here. So as a warning to you, that means there are probably alarm spells on every single one of these doors. So if you messed that up, or if you had forced the door, potentially there is an alarm that will go off.
Good to know. Okay, Gidget is on door duty.
Okay. Okay. And another room awaits beyond. You can see that whatever you did in this room seems to have lit up all the like places around you, because now you can see that there is a much thinner and smaller hallway beyond. So this one doesn't have any kind of pipes or anything. This just seems to be like a carry way. For people just to move through this space beyond.
All right. Albie is still ahead of us, I presume?
Yeah, so as you step down the way, Albie will go and give you the double snort, like, no, there's something wrong here. And he's, like, sniffing around, like, delicate. He's not moving, but he's sniffing kind of at the tiled panels on the floor.
Are the maintenance lights that Gidget turned on extending into here? Oh,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, so it looks like they're all probably wired on the same system. So lucky you, whatever Gidget did, it seems to, it's going to be able to help you out for most of this.
Nice, nice, nice.
Hell yeah.
Gidget, let's exchange our information. Let's stay in touch.
Gidget, can I call you to help with yeah. all of my adventures? Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, she hears the familiar T-snort alert. She will go and where he is snuffling down onto the ground, she will check for traps.
Yep, go ahead and give me that investigate. Investigate first, which again, anybody can do, but only people proficient with thieves' tools can deactivate or disable traps, is how it works in the 5e.
I have a 25. Negative one for investigate, so
not Tony.
Never Tony.
Yeah. So 25, Jesus fucking Christ. All right, so yeah, man, this panel is a floor pressure plate. So if you had moved forward and stepped on it ever so slightly, it would have decompressed. And you can see with a 20 fucking 5 that there are thin wires that like go up through the ceiling and like travel up the walls here and away into some kind of alarm system. So if you stepped on this, you probably would have, again, triggered whatever this alarm system is that now winds through this entire place.
That's a good pig.
What a good boy.
Good boy.
So yeah, she will definitely attempt to disarm it.
Because you can see, with that, again, a 25, looking down the hall, there seem to be about 6 of these things, like, offset from each other. So yeah, go ahead and try to give me, so that thieves tech check tool to try and disable that.
18.
18. Okay, that is good. So that is good enough that you can choose to permanently disable them, or you can choose to just like leave them there. So nobody will be able to tell, but they'll basically like reset once you go past.
Can Gidget tell if you were to leave it, if we were to return the same way, it would still activate the trap. It's not about which direction you're going in.
It's basically just disabling it for 1 minute. Because if you were going, the other way, they would basically reset. But if somebody came after you a minute later, right, they wouldn't be able to tell that anybody passed or messed with the trap.
Right.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I was going to say, because my next question would be, or Gidget's question to Tony would be, all right, I can disable it permanently or have it reset after a minute. I feel like the people who live here or whatever maybe still resides here is probably aware that it's there. So what do you think we should do?
I mean, given that something was just watching us, I would feel better about just disabling it for a minute to allow us to pass.
You got it, Captain.
Incredible. You're incredible, Gidget. I'm a big fan.
Kara doesn't know what she's missing.
Yeah, Rook mutters something under her breath. That sounds probably vaguely like encouragement or agreement. Yes, but you can. So you go ahead and you hear kind of a pressure release thing. I don't know. Maybe you put like a little wedge or balloon or something under something very fucking clever to hold the system for a little bit. And you all can wind your way. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, so since you said there were six of these, is it like six consecutive tile panels or is it like one every other one?
It's like on a chessboard, it'd be like white, right? So there's like a little gap in between to like get people in case they were walking on the left side, like just the left, they wouldn't be safe.
Okay.
It's right, left.
Yeah, she'll make a note of that in case we do have to come by here so that we can just
hop,
try and walk that pattern.
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah, so you successfully bypass this trapped hallway, but you will see at the end of this, like, long hallway here, you actually come into, there's no door or anything, it just opens up into a very, very, very big cylindrical room. So big, in fact, that the safety maintenance lights, you know, they're only at about normal, like, wall height, so 12 feet or so. And they ring the outside of the cylindrical chamber here, but the blackness of just space up above it, clearly this room is so tall, there's nothing illuminated beyond that. So you can't see, like, the ceiling. The vision goes away there. And you hear a big sound of something, like, turning, probably far up ahead, maybe some kind of propeller or fan.
That sounds scary.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you hear that, and then, so right now you have the big cylindrical room in front of you, and then on the far side, there is another set of those closed double doors, but that's about, you know, 60 feet away from where you are.
Let's have Albie do a little trot around the space.
Yep. Boop, 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 boop. Yep. So he walks out, sniffing around the ground, sniffing. Doesn't give any kind of indicator as he's just sort of standing there in the middle of the hallway.
Yeah, let's go. I think as we step in here to try and maybe see or to get an idea of how tall this is, since her dancing lights work out to a range of 120 feet, she'll send them up to see if they like hit the ceiling or if she can illuminate it or if it just like they just like blink out.
Nice. So here's what I'm gonna do because that was smart. I'm going to give you all a perception check as those lights, you know, you kind of walk out into the center of the space here and you send the lights up to see what's going on here. So everybody give me a perception check.
7 for Gidget.
Uh-oh.
10 for Tony.
Uh-oh. All right, roll for Pig. Roll for Arrow as well. So so on this, it's going to be Nassim, since perception is wisdom, you would just go ahead and roll a d20 and add that wisdom number.
Okay.
18 for Albert, and he also cannot be surprised.
Okay, that is good.
16 for Arrow.
Okay, Arrow will not be surprised. Mr. Pig will not be surprised. Everyone else, so fucking surprised. On the ceiling, as you send up these lights into the darkness, you see, illuminated far too late, that there are a bunch of these scuttling creatures that are moving across, like, this platform about 50 feet up above. And they look like they've got about 4 legs and a central red blinking eye that once they all scuttle into place, you see about 15 blinking red eyes. And that's where we're ending the episode. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Some quick, you know, like, thank you for sticking with us through this interesting format. We're experimenting and having a lot of fun with it. So thank you. Excited, definitely, to see how this is all going to come back together. People are going to weave together. But thank you all so much for sticking around. I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Konowich. Your gnomish artificer, Gidget Glitch, and your satyr bard, Aoife Flannery, were played by Sage. Tony Silvertail, your half-orc fighter, was played by Nassim Etemad. And Luvera Sath, your drow rogue, was played by Katie. Well, thank you again, like I said, everybody, so much for joining us. And until next time...
Venture away!